Egypt, the situation remains tense, volatile. Today, the latest, a Cairo court ordering ousted President Hosni Mubarak freed from prison, a move that could complicate Egypt's increasingly violent political transition, while militants in Sinai killed 26 policemen. And of course, the death toll now from the Muslim Brotherhood's fight back against the removal of President Mohamed Morsi has left nearly 1,000 dead in Egypt. Joining us now from the Century Foundation is Michael Hanna. Michael, good afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
So please respond to the latest news. What's going on?
Well, it's a pretty grim series of events, as you just recounted. And it seems as if Egypt has really crossed some important thresholds. And there's a real question in my mind whether it's retrievable. It's gotten to the point where Egypt might now be set on something like an incurable cycle of violence. Violence and retaliation, further repression and killings. And that's a pretty scary eventuality to consider.
You make it sound like it's indefinite. I mean, surely there would be an end point to something like that.
Well, many countries have seen bouts of civil strife. And once these types of civil conflicts are touched off, these aren't the types of things that are easily remedied and oftentimes lead to protracted conflict.
What are some of those boundaries that Egypt has crossed over now, you think?
Well, we've seen mass killing of pro-Morsi protesters in a sort of shocking, heavy-handed way. We've seen retaliatory violence. We've seen that from pro-Morsi protesters sporadically throughout the week since his ouster. We've seen numerous sectarian reprisals against churches and Christian establishments and homes. And so you see a country whose social fabric is fraying, and trust destroyed between communities, and that's a very dangerous combination.
Michael, did the military, which is the power behind the throne and now on the throne right now in Egypt for so many years, did they miscalculate the strength of support for Morsi when they went ahead and removed him? Or was this just inevitable? Has this kind of been simmering beneath the surface that Morsi, head of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, leading the country in a direction that is too different from where the mainstream in Egypt wants to go?
I think it's safe to assume still that that majority support is behind the military. The year of President Morsi's tenure saw, I think, an unprecedented shedding of soft support. There remains a committed core behind the Muslim Brotherhood, a very resilient and fervent core, even perhaps more so than it was because of the killing and repression. But it's sort of beside the point whether the military has majority support or not. I think these steps are going to be destabilizing because of that committed core, because of the change of mindset that exists within Egypt since the fall of Mubarak and the start of the uprising. And repression is probably going to be destabilizing and will likely lead to what I think is a very problematic cycle of violence.
Michael, you have Western countries treading very, very thin ground here. The U.S. just came out a few minutes ago and said it continues to work with Egypt's interim government and the military. And Chuck Hagel also saying that the U.S. is reviewing every aspect of Egypt's relationship. Yesterday, we had the European Union and Commission issue a statement saying that it was reviewing in the coming days the relationship because it was extremely urgent. But on the other hand, you've Saudi Arabia's king coming out and saying, well, any aid that's taken away, don't worry, we'll replace it. So there's a very thin line here, isn't there?
Well, we know that the Saudis are longtime enemies of the Muslim Brotherhood. They did not take kindly to the U.S. approach to the fall of Mubarak, and they clearly see this as an opportunity. I think it's very myopic of Saudi Arabia and others in the Gulf to believe that they can go all out and simply destroy the Muslim Brotherhood as a political force. And I fear that type of zero-sum approach to this conflict is going to have very far ranging and lasting effects in terms of trends of militancy and radicalization that the region is going to have to deal with for years to come.
Michael, you said it's fraying, and it clearly is. I mean, close on, or maybe even more than 1,000 dead is nothing to, you know, to play down. When it comes to the markets, however, we're not seeing a huge sell-off. I don't know if we should equate the two, but wouldn't we be seeing a complete meltdown in markets if people were giving up on Egypt as a country in civil war now?
Well, I think there's a bigger question about what the regional ramifications will be. And so far, there hasn't been spillover into the Gulf and other areas that might move markets. We have seen spillover since the ouster of Morsi in other parts of North Africa, in Libya and Tunisia. But it's yet to metastasize in a way that is going to be inducing turmoil throughout the region.
Talk to us about the region then, because one of our stories following this, looking, we mentioned Saudi Arabia and their role versus Turkey. How does this break down, and what determines which countries line up on, you know, the side of the Muslim Brotherhood, which lines up on the side of the military?
It's a very good question, and at times I think people are surprised by how this breakdown happens. Saudi Arabia obviously is a country that has an Islamist outlook, but it's also a monarchy, and the Muslim Brotherhood is seen as a threat to Saudi Arabia and the other monarchies of the Gulf because it is a system of religious legitimation, but that is rooted in now an acceptance of Democratic Party politics. And that is seen as a potential rival and potentially a seditious rival, something that could undermine the stability of Gulf monarchies. A country like the United Arab Emirates is also very worried about the Brotherhood, but from a slightly different angle, because it is a less ostensibly religious country, but it is still very concerned about the Brotherhood as a transnational secret society and potentially destabilizing force in their country. Turkey, on the other hand, has been seen as the patron of the Muslim Brotherhood on a regional level. While it is less Islamist in its ideology and approach than many of the variants of the Muslim Brotherhood in the Arab world, it has wanted to support these new actors on the political scene, believing that they were newly ascendant and were more in line with Turkey's newfound aspirations for regional leadership. And it's placed a very serious bet on support of the Brotherhood and other Islamist actors in Egypt, obviously, and in Libya and in Tunisia, where the Nahda Party, which is something of an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, is now the party with a plurality and is leading the government. And so you have this very stark division now playing out in the region, and you have to add that on to the already very serious regional tensions from the Syrian civil war and its spillover.
Michael, is it realistic to imagine a banning of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt? I mean, it's being considered. There's, you know, the equivalent of a bill there now, but I mean, is it possible even, you think?
It's important to distinguish what the Muslim Brotherhood is. The Muslim Brotherhood is a social movement and a movement for religious proselytization. Since the fall of Mubarak, it stood up a separate wing called the Freedom and Justice Party, which is supposed to be the political wing. So it's unclear at the moment how far such a proposed ban would go, whether it would encompass both the Freedom and Justice Party, the political wing, and the social movement, the Muslim Brotherhood itself. Needless to say, I think this is a very unwise move and perhaps underestimates the remaining popularity and base of support for the Brotherhood, which isn't to say that they are a majority at the moment, but they still are an organic and endurable and ineradicable part of Egyptian society And their repression in this fashion, I think, will have very disastrous results for Egypt. And that's not a reflection of their competence in government, because they clearly failed in that mission. But trying to simply excise them from the body politic is not a workable recipe.
If there's even a hint that the Suez Canal is in jeopardy, that's something that would hit markets very hard, because it would hit the crude oil market and might even spill over from there. But is that something that is like an extreme case scenario where something could jeopardize its openness and safety? Or is that something that could actually happen, given what's going on in Egypt?
Yeah, it's very hard to imagine. I think part of the reason that markets have not moved significantly is that turmoil in Egypt now is something of a consistent pattern. Obviously, this is a more significant stage of turmoil, but this has been a very turbulent 2+ years. That being said, Suez is heavily fortified, heavily guarded. I imagine that they are on heightened alert, and the military obviously understands the centrality of Suez in terms of the Egyptian budget and financial needs. And for the moment, I find that very hard to imagine.
Michael, any concern that the current military leadership is becoming sort of intoxicated with power, and that it will just be very difficult for any kind of diplomatic solution to come about?
Absolutely. I think there were very serious diplomatic mediation efforts to try to avoid or at least forestall the violent dispersal of the protests. There was a moment when diplomats thought that there was an agreement on confidence-building steps, not a total settlement of the situation, but at least forward progress. And it appears to have fallen apart when the interim authorities led by the military essentially backed out of that preliminary deal. And, of course, that's a very serious sign of concern.
All right. Michael Hanna. Michael Hanna, thank you so much for joining us. Fascinating conversation. Joining us from the Century Foundation on the Ring Central phone line.